will explain this briefly, and I hope it will be clear. What is conditioned to accept envy? Envy being measurement, comparison. Someone is bright, intelligent, has success, applauded, and the other, I have not. Through comparison, through measurement, envy is cultivated from childhood. There is envy as an object, as something outside of oneself, and one observes it being envious. And envy is the observer. There is no division between the observer and the observed. The observer is the envy. Please follow this little bit. And when he realizes that the observer cannot possibly do anything about envy, because he is the cause and the effect, which is envy. Whatever he does with regard to envy is still envy. Right? Are you following this? Okay. So, the what is, which is our daily life, with all its problems, fear, envy, jealousy, the utter despair, the loneliness, is not different from this, from the observer who says, I am lonely. The observer is lonely. The observer is envy, is fear. Right? And therefore the observer cannot possibly do anything about what is. I wonder. Which does not mean he accepts what is. Which does not mean he is contented with what is. But when there is no conflict with what is, and this conflict is brought about through the division between the observer and the observed, when there is no resistance to what is, then you will find there is a complete transformation. And that is meditation. To find out for oneself the whole question of the observer, the structure and the nature of the observer, which is yourself. And the observer is the observed, which is part of you. To realize the totality of this, the unity of this, is meditation, in which there is no conflict whatsoever. And therefore there is the dissolution, going beyond what is. Then also you will see or you'll ask yourself, what is love? We have dealt with the last time we met here, fear. Now we're going to consider together this question of love. Though that word is heavily loaded, so trodden upon, so spoiled by the politician, by the priest, by every magazine that talks about it. So what is love? Not what should be, not what's the ideal, not the ultimate, but the love that we have, what is it? The thing that we know, which we call love, in that there is hate, in that there is jealousy, in that there is tremendous torture. We are not being cynical, but merely observing actually what is, what the thing that we call love. And is love hate? Is love jealousy? Is love possessiveness of the wife or the husband or the domination? And one says that one loves one's family, one's children. Do you love your children? If you loved your children with your heart, not with your shoddy little minds, do you think there will be a war tomorrow? If you loved your children, would you educate them this way? Make them conform to a rotting society? Train them, force them to accept the established order? If you really loved your children, would you allow them to be killed horribly in a war, whether it be your favorite war or not? So all this indicates, as you observe, that there is no love at all. Love isn't sentiment. Love isn't emotional nonsense. And above all, love isn't pleasure. So one must understand the question of pleasure. Because for us, love, sex and pleasure are involved. When we talk about love, there is not only the love of God, whatever that may mean, and I don't think it has any meaning, even to the churchman, because there too, they are in conflict with their ambitions, with their desires, with their powers, with their possessions, with their gods, with their beliefs and rituals. So to us, love means the enjoyment of sex, pleasure. And also it involves in love pain, torture. So we're going to find out what pleasure means. And please bear in mind that we are not denying pleasure to see those lovely mountains lit by the setting sun to see those marvelous trees that have withstood the fire, the dust of many months, washed clean by the sun, by the rain. To see the stars, if you ever see the stars, is great pleasure. But that is not to us pleasure. What we are concerned is pleasure, sensuous pleasure, and the pleasure that we derive from something intellectual, emotional, and so on. So we have to consider this question. What is pleasure? And please bear in mind that the speaker is not denying pleasure. But we're trying to understand it. Go behind the word. Pleasure, like fear, is engendered by thought. You have the pleasure. You have an experience of yesterday as you stood in one of those valleys that are still, looking at all the marvel of the hills and the silence. There was great delight and pleasure at the moment. Then thought comes in and says, how nice it would be to repeat it. Thinking about that experience of yesterday, whether it be the looking at the lovely tree and the sky and the hills, or thinking about the sex that you enjoyed last night, is a pleasure. Thought, thinking about that which gave a delight yesterday, thinking about it, living with it in thought, in image, is the beginning of pleasure. And thinking about what might happen, the pleasure being denied tomorrow, might lose your job, there might be accident, ill health. Thinking about it, that is, the pain, the ill health, the accident, is fear. So thought creates both fear and pleasure. And to us, love is thought. Please follow this. Because love to us is pleasure. Pleasure is the outcome of thought, nourished by thought. Perhaps not at the moment, at the actual moment of seeing the sunset or the sexual act, but thinking about it. That is pleasure. So to us, love is engendered by thought, nourished by thought, sustained and prolonged as pleasure by thought. Which again, when you look very closely, is an obvious fact, not to be denied. And so, on us, is love thought? Can thought cultivate love? Or can it cultivate pleasure? It can cultivate pleasure, but it cannot possibly, under any circumstances, cultivate love any more than thought can cultivate humility. So love is not pleasure. Love is not desire. But you cannot deny desire or pleasure. When you look at the world, at the beauty of a tree or the beauty of a face, there is great pleasure, enjoyment at the moment, but thought interferes and gives it a space and time to flourish as memory and pleasure. So when one realizes this, understand it, which is part of meditation, the structure and the nature of pleasure in relation to love, then you will find that love is something entirely different. Then you will really love your children. Then you will really create a new world. Then what, do what you will when you know love. There is no wrong. It is only when you are pursuing pleasure as you are, then everything goes wrong. And there is also another problem, that is death. We have considered what is living, that is the actual, the everyday. We have involved ourselves in taking a journey deeply within ourselves to find out what is love. And also, we are going to find out what death means. First of all, to understand this really great problem, not what lies beyond death, what happens after death? You will find out, if you know how to die, and then if you know how to die, then what happens is irrelevant. So we're going to find out. Death is inevitable. Like any machinery, like any organism that is being constantly used, will inevitably come to an end. Old age, disease, and through disease, without not knowing what it means to die, die. So there is the problem of old age. And the old age to us is a horror. I do not know if you ever noticed how in the autumn a leaf falls from the tree. How beautiful it is. What lovely color. What gentleness. Full of beauty. So easily destroyed. And with us, as we grow old, Look at ourselves. The pretensions. The disfigurement. The ugliness. Observe it yourself. And it becomes a problem. Old age. Because we have not lived rightly in our youth, in our middle age. We have never lived at all. Because we are frightened. Frightened of living and frightened of dying. And as we grow old, everything happens to us. So that is one of the problems. So we're going to find out what it means to die, knowing that the organism comes to an end, and knowing that the mind in its despair coming to an end will inevitably seek a hope, a comfort, in some theory, in the theory of resurrection or reincarnation. You know, the whole of Asia is conditioned to accept that theory, reincarnation. And they talk about it a great deal, write about it. They have invested their whole life in the hope of a new life, next life. But they forget one thing in that, one final, ultimate thing in that. That is, if you are going to be born next life, you must live rightly this life. Therefore, it means it matters tremendously what you do this life. How you live, what you do, what you think, how you talk, how your thoughts function. If you do not live rightly, next life you'll have the reward of not living rightly, which is punishment. But they forget all that. And talk about the beauty of reincarnation, the justice, and all that trivial nonsense. So we are neither escaping from the fact through some theory, but facing the fact without fear. What does it mean to die? Knowing the organism comes to an end. What does it mean to die psychologically, inwardly? And in the dying, there is no argument. You can't say, wait a few days more, please. I haven't finished my book. I haven't become the chief executive of some beastly little organization. I haven't become the archbishop. Hold on a minute. You can't argue. So, one has to find out inwardly, psychologically, to die, how to die. To die, that is to end. To end to all the past, all the pleasures, to the remembrance that you have cherished, to the things that you hold on to. To die every day. Not in theory, but actually. To die the pleasure that you had yesterday. Which means to die immediately to that pleasure. Not give it a continuance and to live that way, so that the mind is always fresh, young and innocent, vulnerable, is meditation. So if you have laid the foundation of virtue, which is order, that is, in relationship, and when there is this quality of love and dai, which is all of life, then the mind becomes extraordinarily quiet, silent, naturally, not enforced through discipline, through control, through suppression. Then that silence is immensely rich. Then beyond that, no word, no description is of any avail. Then the mind does not inquire into the absolute, because it has no need to inquire. For in that silence, there is that which is. And the whole of this is the benediction of meditation.